Welcome to the Brown Thomas Podcast. In today's podcast, I speak with Norman Crowley, an inspirational international entrepreneur. Norman has several successful businesses in the clean energy and climate action space. And in our podcast today, we speak about one of his most exciting ventures, Ava Studio. Ava transforms the world's most desirable classic cars to electric, and Ava has a pop-up in Brown Thomas Dundrum. I'm Louise Duffy, and this is the Brown Thomas Podcast. Welcome to the Brown Thomas Podcast. Norman Crowley, how are you?
I'm well.
Good.
In truth, slightly hungover, but that's a separate story.
But you have a good story and you have a good reason for that. Just acquiring businesses left, right and centre, you have to welcome them properly, right?
Indeed. Yeah. I'm doing my duty. Yeah.
Yes, as an Irish man. So listen, we are delighted that amongst the bags, the beauty and the brogues in Brown Thomas in Dundrum, there's an Studio Ava Arctic Defender. Tell me about how that came to be.
So, well, we set up Ava about 2 years ago in the middle of a global pandemic. Mm-hmm. So it's exactly the thing you want to do.
Of course.
I guess the reasons why we set up Ava first is it's part of a wider climate discussion, which I'm sure we'll have, but we're obsessed with climate change and ways to fix climate change. But also we feel strongly that a lot of the climate message is like, if somebody says to you something is sustainable, you automatically assume it's just a little bit rubbish. You know, it's, as we say, it's the least worst option. Whereas nowadays, a lot of what's sustainable is very cool. If people know Tesla and all these new fancy electric cars, there's no compromises. They're all quite beautiful. Mm-hmm. And we got to thinking about all these beautiful classic cars that are out there, and how stunning they are and how inspiring they are, but also how unreliable they are. And it's a kind of old male pursuit to be buying these old vintage cars. And so in order to inspire people, I guess, we got the idea to set up Ava. And what that does is it takes some of the most beautiful cars in the world and makes them electric. And we don't try to compete with Tesla, where we make thousands of cars. Like we make normally about 10 cars a year. But those cars are beautiful, and each one carries a very deep story. And so the Arctic, which is in Brown Thomas at the moment, is one of five that we're building around this concept of Arctic. And the challenge was, can you take something as iconic as a Land Rover Defender? You know, the Queen has a Land Rover Defender. All these famous people have them. But can you make it with the lowest carbon footprint? And so there are five being made, and the last of the five will be the vehicle with the lowest carbon footprint of any vehicle that's ever existed. And so it's a kind of curation process to get from vehicle one, which is one of Brown Thomas, to vehicle five. And I'll give you an example of the kind of stuff we're working on. So the plastic bits of the car are made from ocean recovered plastic. So we take plastic out of the Mediterranean, we make it into plastic again. So we take old plastic bottles, all that, we make it into a perfect Land Rover, but it's actually made out of recovered plastic. And so in the fifth one, the metal in the car is going to be made of the lowest carbon metal that's ever been made. And we're working with one of the biggest metals companies in the world to do that. And so its job is to create something beautiful, and that Arctic is beautiful, but also in the process of creating it, to either inspire about climate change or to inspire about human performance. Mm-hmm. And so another one that maybe your listeners would have seen in the media is called the Croxford Defender. Mm-hmm. And that's named after a British Army captain called Stuart Croxford. And Stuart was, when he was 28 years old, he was in Afghanistan with the British Army. He drove over an improvised explosive device, and the vehicle exploded, and he sadly lost his leg. And that's very tragic. But what was most interesting is when he came back, he struggled for a short while with this disability, but then within a year of the accident, he did an Ironman triathlon.
Yeah.
And then also himself and his wife set up a business, and it was like an education business. And we found the whole story quite inspiring, particularly, you know, you can look at people who are brave and you can say, what if we assume that people who are brave are just the same as you and I, then what makes let's dig into what makes them particularly brave around this. And what we discovered in getting to know Stu and his wife Lizzie is that actually it was about the bravery wasn't driving over an explosive, right? The bravery was the recovery, the courage that him and Lizzie had to create a business together, and then the success of that. And so the Croxford Defender celebrates all of that. And a couple of months ago, we did an amazing event with Stuart where we cycled from Land's End to John O'Groats, so 2,000 kilometers. And Stuart almost broke the record for not a disabled person doing that journey, but actually he was only a half day off the fastest person who'd ever cycled that.
Wow.
So it's incredible. And from that, we try and understand what makes somebody tick, right? And, and try and inspire people from that.
And in terms of, well, firstly, did you cycle along?
I cycled at the beginning. It's a funny story.
It's a tough one.
I'm kind of middle of the road fit as opposed to proper fit. And I
record breaking fit. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. And so I can do about 130 kilometers a day, which is kind middle of the road. Serious people can do 200, 250. And I thought I'll go with Stu the first day and I'll do the last day. And then I said to Stu, like, I'll do the first day with you. And he was like, oh, brilliant. He said, the first day is 36 hours nonstop. And it's 450 kilometers. And I was like,
firstly, is 36 hours is something to think about anyway.
And he completely inspired our team. Like, some of our team were training properly for months in advance, and he smashed them. He absolutely smashed them. Like, it was a real inspirational thing, actually, seeing him in action. You know,
so you had the first day. Okay, we might leave it there, will we?
Yeah, it was. I had to go and do other stuff then.
You were busy. You're a businessman. I get that. That's okay. Yeah, you got a few balls in the air. That's fine. But listen, do you know what's beautiful about it is, you know, obviously, you know, the elements that are used in these defenders, you know, it's so progressive, but the story telling that it allows you in just creating 10 of those, you know, I know that even the seatbelts were an ode to his days in the army, and like that you could really tell a story. And, you know, we have designers and founders on all the time, and it's all about storytelling. I wouldn't have expected that level of storytelling could go into a vehicle, which is incredible.
Yeah. And we start to do things now with vehicle curation where if somebody wants a vehicle, they can decide first what kind of vehicle it is. So we've built a 1981 red Ferrari, right? Beautiful, the classic red Ferrari with no roof on it. It's very, very beautiful. But I can't say who the brand is, but we're co-curating that with a very famous brand at the moment. And everything to do with it is linked to their brand. Yeah. And then that car, when it's finished, will become their ambassador car. It's going to have a very happy retirement. It's going to be in Miami. It's going to be in New York, all this kind of stuff.
What do you drive?
I drive whatever is in the garage and running on that day.
Well, I'm sure it looks good, whatever it is. Well, listen, where does it all happen then? And who's doing that? What's your team like at Ava?
Yeah, so the team are brilliant. They're all ex, like Williams in the UK, McLaren, all this mixture of male and female, like our head of software is female, ex-Tata and ex-Tesla. Like, so they're from all over the world, but almost exclusively Irish, but learned their skills in the UK or the States and then have come back to Ireland to do Ava, basically. Okay. And Ava is very, you know, the car business is quite tough in general. You know, you got to make a lot of vehicles to make money, and the amount you make per vehicle is very little. Whereas what Ava is on a very different mission, it's a very small number of cars that carry quite a lot of meaning. So for engineers, this is brilliant because they get to, you know, it gets them in the heart rather than just constantly churning stuff out.
Well, I would have thought that, for people creating the Ava vehicles, it's has to be such a labor of love. Like, every detail is so defined. You aren't going down the Tesla route in that you're not going to make millions of cars, but you are going into developing a hyper classic. Tell me about that.
Yeah. So the hyper classic then is, again, back to meaning, is working with some of the most famous car designers in the world. So examples of that, Sir Ian Callum, who former Jaguar designer, very iconic. And also then Peter Brock. So when Peter Brock, American, obviously was 17, he joined General Motors in 1957. Mm-hmm. And he drew the shape of what's called the Stingray. And the Stingray went on, the Corvette Stingray went on to become one of the most iconic cars in the US, like without any question, one of the most beautiful cars. And we approached Peter when he was 83, and he was retired with about 10 years. And he's a designer true and true. He's obsessed with vehicles, obsessed with design. And but yet with the last 10 years, I guess with age, nobody wanted to, you know, to use him in big productions and stuff. And we asked him to say, like, one of his most iconic designs is called the Daytona. It won Le Mans in 1963. So it's like iconic. And we said, we would like to reimagine the Daytona as an electric vehicle for 2022. And he designed, we haven't disclosed this design and won't disclose it until later in the year, but he designed one of the most beautiful cars that has ever been seen. And so what we're doing there is the Daytona, there were only six Daytonas ever made. They were handcrafted, hand hammered, the metal in the US in Cal Metalworks. And so not only have we gotten Peter to design this car, but actually the first six, which will be $1 million each, are going to be handmade on exactly the same equipment as the original six. So these things are steeped in history and heritage. And then, but they're electric and they're new. And so they very much speak to what we're trying to do, which is not talk about sustainability as some old washing powder that doesn't work or whatever, like things that are just old. But actually, this thing screams modernity, beauty, but yet very low carbon footprint. So,
And where will these cars go? Where is your client?
So our clients for the first six are mainly American, but also British and also Irish. And so there will be at least one in Ireland, and they're quite stunning. And then, so the idea, quite like, I guess, a high-end fashion brand, the every year we will release six of something or max 10 of something. And each one will be a collaboration with somebody very famous. So another one that might interest your listeners is the Cobra. So and this is very much an Irish design story. So in the 60s, the heir to the Guinness fortune was a guy called Tara Brown. And he became the absolute poster child of the swinging 60s. There's a very famous centerfold in Vogue in 1965. That's Tara and his wife then. And it's this iconic picture. And he's dressed in his velvet velour suit and all this kind of thing. And she's dressed in ultimate 60s chic. And like, he was an absolute playboy. Like, the Beatles play, or not the Beatles, the Loving Spoonful played his 21st in Luggalore. The Rolling Stones were there, the Beatles were there. And then he teamed up with a bunch of designers, three of them, called Bender, Edwards, and Vaughan. And they were the ones who curated this kind of 60s psychedelic. So if we think of psychedelic, we think of these crazy colors, right? And these were the guys who came up with that. And they painted Paul McCartney's piano. So Tara got them to, he had an AC Cobra, which is this beautiful kind of convertible sports car. And he got them to hand paint it in this crazy psychedelic colors. And tragically, he died. He liked to race cars. He died not in that car, but in another car with his girlfriend. His girlfriend survived, but he died tragically in, I think, 67. But what we did there, again, to inspire and to create amazingness, we built a Cobra from scratch, like a race Cobra, very quick. In again, electric engineering, top of the range. And then we found Dudley Edwards, who's the only one of Bender and Edwards and Vaughan still alive. He's 78 years old. And we got him to paint the Cobra exactly like the original.
How wonderful is that?
It is nuts, this vehicle.
That's incredible.
It is so beautiful.
When can we see it?
It's on our website, actually.
Okay.
And it's studioava.com, and it's beautiful. And we're doing a revamp of it quite soon as part of a TV show. And it is, I'll tell you a funny story. Like last year, we had the vehicle at Salon Privé, which is a very exclusive car show in Blenheim Palace in London. And like Ferrari were there, Aston Martin were there, all this. And here's this bunch of Paddies with a car startup, right? And we have a stand, same as they have a stand. But our stand is mobbed, like, because we have Stuart Croxford there with the Defender. And when we got the results of the show afterwards, there were 10 times more people on our stand than there were on Ferrari's stand.
It's exciting.
Yeah. It's crazy.
I mean, you have such a fascinating day to day. Like, what is your passion? Is cars your passion? Is sustainability? What is it that makes you tick? Or is it just starting up these outrageous businesses that fly?
It's all of those, really. As my wife says, like, I'm 51, and my wife said to me recently, said, "You're really living your best life now, aren't you?"
You are, right?
our accountant said to us recently, he said, "You're the only one I know who converted your passion for classic cars into a profit center."
It's amazing, isn't it?
Yeah, but it's, it's all those things. And I guess, look, I started my first business when I was 15. And so, like, at 51, you start to figure out slowly how life works, right? And so it's all of those things. It's with Ava, it's the cars, the engineering of the cars. It's the story, which is so inspiring, of these people and their courage and all that. I gotta tell you a funny one, just back to the Cobra, which is so, just because it's so funny. So he starts to paint the car over in England, and Ben Keely, who's our videographer, says to him, "What's it like to paint it again after 58 years? And he said, "I was out of my head the first time I came."
Hence the psychedelic. There you have it.
Exactly. So look, it's great to be able to combine all the passions.
It's incredible.
Yeah, it's still business. And so it has the challenges of business and stuff like that, you know.
When you look back as an entrepreneur then, and you've had immense success, as you say, you started off at 15, by 40, it is the one we all know. You sold 3 businesses by the time you were 40 for 750 million. Well done you. I'm 40 in 2 years. I'm worried. So tell me, when you look back.
We can come back to whether it's a good idea or a bad idea to do what I did.
Well, it's a good idea, I can tell you. So tell me, when you look back, when you take the time to reflect, what was the most thrilling part of it all? What was the day that you think that was the high?
Look, full of highs and lows.
Yeah.
So lows, the famous low is one time we almost sold the business for $1 billion. And with 2 hours to go, the deal fell through because of Lehman Brothers and the global financial crisis. So that was a low, like an absolute,
that was
soul-crushing low.
Tragic, you know? Timing. Imagine.
And then the highs come all the time. A lot of, when you look back, you only remember the lows. But the highs, you know, every time we win a big deal, there's a high, you know, or every time we sell a business, there's just a sense of success. Over the last 5 or 6 years, it's become much more about creating success for our team, basically. And because I guess we know now how to operate businesses and set them up. And it's challenging, like, it's never easy, but it is understood by us. And so now it's much more about, you know, getting our team to be successful. But also getting them to be successful without killing themselves in the process. You know, you were saying, which is true, like, I sold, you know, businesses for $750 million by the time I was 40, but that does not come without collateral damage.
Of course.
In your mind, and a lot of what we're doing lately is, how do you create success without all the collateral damage?
Have you figured it out?
We're slowly figuring it out. Like, it's all the, you know, how to explain it without sounding buzzwordy, but it's about, like, mental health and meditation and getting people to
be successful without the unhealthy obsessions that come along with it. Yeah.
Okay. I'd imagine that comes with time. I think you probably just have to experience the collateral damage for a period before you learn to. Is that?
I'm very friendly with one of the top 20 richest people in Spain, right? I won't say who it is, but he's an entrepreneur, started off with nothing, started his first business at the age of 9, if you can believe that, right? Because he had to, because his dad was killed. And then, like, I'm going to an entrepreneur event tonight in Cork. And the thing that people always ask is what drives entrepreneurs, right?
Yeah.
And I've slowly come around to the conclusion that what drives entrepreneurs is raw hate. Like, it is not a positive emotion. It is like, I will prove that person wrong. Like,
either
a parent said you'd never amount to anything, or somebody in business said that's a stupid idea and you'll never get there with it, or somebody crossed you in a deal.
Yeah.
And you make a decision then. And for serial entrepreneurs, of which there are many, that emotion that's driving them nonstop is not a positive emotion. It is. And even when the person who said it is dead and gone or whatever, or you've shown them 50 times over that you're better, that hate is still there. Right?
That's incredible. Yeah. And is that a healthy thing then?
No, it's completely unhealthy.
Okay. But would you advise against it, or would you advise someone
Well, you can't stop it, right?
Is the
thing. And I noticed it with my daughters, like, they're 23 and 21, and I don't think they run on the same emotion I run on, but they like to win, and they will work their ass off to win. Now, where the hell do they get that from, right?
Black cat, black kitten.
Yeah, and when they're in the middle of doing it and they're stressed to the gills, it's not pleasant watching them,
Right.
And you want them to win, but you're there going, oh my God, I wish you weren't built like this,
Isn't that amazing? Yeah. Genetics are a funny thing, aren't they? They've had a comfortable life, so it must be a sense of pride for you to see that drive in them.
It is a sense of pride, but it's also a sense of responsibility to make sure that it doesn't drive them too far. Like, you show me immense talent, or, if you show me an amazing designer who's incredibly driven, I'll show you a problem sitting behind that, right?
Yeah.
Because you do not get that, talent and that craziness without a dark side that comes along with it. And whether that's working nonstop or whether that's some kind of mental thing, we're trying to, I guess, understand that and tame that so that people can have this wonderful success but not go off the deep end in the process, basically.
Yeah. But to talk about it too is an important thing. And it's so great that now neurodiversity is such a conversation, because I would say there's an element of suppression in these people. I think that they probably try, but it's the thing that makes them so great too.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And it's like, I, not mentioning specifics, but I remember Dolores O'Riordan passed, and she created these iconic songs. And then I heard after she passed that she suffered all her life with bipolar and stuff. Mm. And you're just like, but yet the talent that came from
the talent,
so
incredible. It's the drive, and it's like things with ADHD or any of these syndromes or what you might call them, they drive a person on. So we talked about Ava and, what the wonderful things that are happening in that studio. It's part of it. It is a part of a much bigger organization that is Cool Planet. So when did you decide that your next venture was going to address global climate change, that you wanted to do your bit for that? When did that happen?
It happened during the 2000s. So in the 2000s, I set up a business with a team called Inspired Gaming, and it was a gaming software business, and it became our monster. It went from 8 people to 2,500 people, $500 million in revenue a year. And it was based at a London public company. And because that wasn't enough, we also had another business called The Cloud. And the guy I was running The Cloud with was a guy called George Polk,
George, iconic American, lives in London. His great granduncle was president of America. Mm-hmm. He amazing guy. And he was obsessed with climate change. So he would, on the average evening, he would invite us to dinner in his house and we would hear from climate scientists when nobody was, you know, when nobody was really focused on climate. And we used to just go for the strawberry daiquiris. He made it strawberry daiquiri. But actually, the message came true to us that this excess that we were living, that at some point we were going to have to pay the price for that. And I think humans in general feel that sense. You know, we can't keep doing this and not pay the price. And when we saw the scientists and met them, we realized that was going to be the case. But then when we met a lot of the NGOs in the space, like Greenpeace and that, we realized that they were conflating a lot of things together, and their message in general was guilt. And guilt does not inspire, right? No. If you're feeling guilty, you cannot be inspirational. You cannot move off that, right? And so we were saying, why is the message about guilt and aggression and there has to be an enemy? Why isn't the message, hey, there's these amazing technologies and they're going to solve this problem and it's going to be okay. But by the way, it's not only going to be okay. Our lives, when we've solved the problem, are just going to be way cooler, right? Mm-hmm. And so examples of that, electric vehicles, right? So they're not just the same as petrol ones. They are 10 times cooler, right? Mm-hmm. And I just drove down from Belfast, where I was last night, in an electric vehicle. I wasn't driving. And it was like I was coasting along in a jet.
Yeah.
This thing, it was, when it needed to go, it could go. And it was so calm and so quiet and so much better, right? And that's one example. Another example is meat, right? So meat is not good for climate. I'm one of those 5-day-a-week vegans who became a 7-day-a-week vegan. And I just feel I'm fully plant-based for about 12 weeks. I've never felt better, right?
Great.
So it's just better, right? Mm-hmm. It's not like, I'm not, like if I'm out and there's only steak on the menu, I love steak. It's not a big deal, right? But I just prefer not to. And so that's another example. Another example is electricity, right? So rather than supporting Putin and ordering gas from Russia, and why don't we just create our own energy here in Ireland, for example? Mm-hmm. And it's clean and it's really simple and we can just run everything on it. And over time, it'll be a tenth of the price of mm-hmm. the energy we have now. So our messages are all, they're very science-backed. They're very economics-backed, right? But, and so we challenge anybody on that. So I say to people, climate change will be largely solved by 2032, right? And people just go, that's outrageous and ridiculous.
Do you think so?
Oh, I absolutely know so. And not only that, but I've got 10 economists standing behind me with reports and scientists absolutely nailing this. And we can share in the show notes those reports, right, for people who want to get down and dirty with it. But and that we challenge people on that and we go, okay, let's sit down, go blow by blow, and we will explain at a practical, tactical, financial level why this is going to happen.
Okay, so I have to challenge you on that because, excellent. I mean, it's not what we are now. No. You know, we all need to do something and we're not all doing something. So how then can it happen? How can you say with such assurance that by 2032, the problem is solved? Because here I am worrying about my daughter's future and, you know, what's it going to be like for them?
Yeah. Oh, by the way, future is still going to be tricky, right?
Yeah.
So we can cover that separately. But like, it's very simple how it's solved, right? And you don't hear this message in the media for all sorts of reasons, okay? None of them healthy reasons, right? Mm-hmm. It's very simple. 90% of climate change is four problems, okay? Energy used in buildings is 20% of the problem. Mm-hmm. Energy used in factories is 40% of the problem. Mm-hmm. Transport is roughly 30% of the problem. And then the rest is meat and other bits and bobs.
Yep. Okay.
So it's very simple. Buildings and factories solved by green energy and efficiency, right? So we waste 40% of all the energy we use in these buildings. So we need to stop that. We have a business in that area. Loads of people have businesses in that area. That's happening at a big pace now. And then green energy, so what's called SWB, solar, wind, battery, right? Okay. And all the data around that is very clear. The numbers are clear. The growth of solar is huge in the world. The growth of all these things is huge in the world. Nothing can stop that from happening at this stage. It's an economic reality. They are the cheapest ways of producing energy. And yes, we look at the moment and we go, well, we have to open new coal plants in Europe because of the Ukraine. That's temporary, right? That's a year, it's 2 years. But the underlying trend is going only one way. If you can produce electricity for a tenth of the price of producing it with coal or gas, that's just economics, right? Mm-hmm. And that doesn't need subsidies. That's not subsidies from government. That's just financial reality. That's where the trend is going. Then you know what's going to happen. It's a one-way bet. So that's those two. Transport, the biggest transport thing is trucks and cars, right? It's not, everyone does flight shaming. You shouldn't be flying all the time. Planes are 2% of the problem, right? Okay. So let's not kill ourselves about the 2% just now. It's not good, but it's 2%, right? Let's fix the other 28% of transport. And that's solved with electric, right? And now, again, everyone was there, well, electric's never going to catch on and you must be dreaming and all that. But actually 6% of cars sold this year were electric. Mm-hmm. So that game is over, right? That mm-hmm. that graph is only going up and to the right, end of story. Now, a lot of people then say about electric cars, I've heard that, you know, they use all these precious rare earth materials and they're messing with the world, right? The reason everyone thinks that is because Chevron and Exxon, the oil companies, spend $700 million a year to make you think like that.
Wow. Right?
But all of the battery lithium is one of the most common elements in the world, and that's the most commonly used element in an electric vehicle. Mm-hmm. So the reason, why do we think that these things are bad? We think they're bad because people have spent a lot of money convincing us that they're bad. Mm-hmm. The final one, which is the most crazy, is meat. Right? So meat is very bad for us and very bad for the planet. Right? So how do you fix meat? Well, we're not going to convince the world to go vegan because humans like to eat meat. Right. Mm-hmm. So that's where wacky science really comes into its own. There's a new technology with the last couple of years called cell ag, right? Cellular agriculture. And it's where instead of growing a cow, killing the cow, sadly, and then taking all the meat from the cow and then figuring out what to do with the other bits that nobody wants, mm-hmm. you take a cell from a cow, you put it in a bioreactor, which is basically a stainless steel bucket, and you grow a burger.
Wow. And how does it taste?
Tastes perfect.
Yeah. Gosh.
At a cellular level, it's the cleanest burger you're ever going to eat. There's no.
It's molecular gastronomy. That's really what it is, right?
It is.
Wow.
And there's billions being poured into that space at the moment. And it's an inevitability. A couple of years now, it's done. And if you're sitting listening to this and you're going, I would hate to eat that, right? Think about something else that you've thought over the years where you thought you'd never do it and now you're doing it.
Okay.
So at a cellular level, it's safer, less bacteria, no antibiotics. It's the purest you'll ever eat, right? It's created in a lab like pharmaceutical level lab, right? But it's created at scale. And also the reason it's inevitable is within 5 years, a cell ag burger is going to be 5% of the cost of a normal burger.
Okay. So Norman, we're going to be okay.
We're going to be fine.
Is this the first ever positive environmental podcast that was published, I think?
Well, wow. I think our message on it is very straight. Now, you know, just to pour a small bit of cold water on it, if I'm right and the numbers say that we're right, your kids... 2032 is a little bit too late, right? And as they say, the die is cast, right?
Yeah.
And the world, the climate of the world will still be unruly. And for your kids and my kids, it will still be tricky. Mm-hmm. There will be storms. The sea will rise. Nothing can stop those things from happening now. But we are humans and we will adapt. And also we will, the same technology that gets us out of the problem will be the technology. We can mess with the weather just a little bit. And that all sounds like the plot from a dystopian movie, but you have to take a step back and just acknowledge we are humans. We're quite clever and mm-hmm. we have a habit. You know, if you listen to the news every day, which I don't, then you start to believe that the world is a horrible place. But as we sit here having this conversation in 2022, the world is the safest it's ever been. Our life expectancy is the longest it's ever been. Mm-hmm. And as humans, we live a more relaxing life than we've ever read. And mm-hmm.
I saw a thing Elon Musk tweeted during the week, and he said he had a photograph of this person completely stressed out. And it was like, I'm so stressed out. This is all horrible. The world's never been as bad. And then the other guy just says, why don't you just put down the phone?
Right. Yeah, yeah, that's it. And you know, when you talk about dystopia, you know, it sounds like a plot from a dystopian movie. Like, dystopian is becoming our new reality after the last couple of years. We're adapting to it, you know.
Yeah. But the reality underneath that statistically is safest time to ever have lived, least wars to ever have. Like, this is the truth, right? When we open our phones, we get a very different message.
We're bombarded, you know, and it's the saturation of messages all at one time is a lot for anyone. You know, and I do like that. So I, you know, on your website, there are things, you know, this isn't just building the world we need in the future. This is the world we want for ourselves right now. So you have flipped the conversation. You have flipped the messaging to say, instead of saying you can't, you won't, put it down, cut it out. It's about Cool Planet is all about making more progressive changes that are more comfortable but sustainable. So absolutely, sustainability needs a new marketing spin. And I know the people to do it after this conversation. But it is, it's amazing, isn't it? It's such a negative conversation. And
it is. Louise, I'll tell you a funny one on that. Sorry for interrupting you. I have two stories or two jokes that I do on that. I go, so like, let's say you and I know each other longer than this recording, and I appear to you and I say, I have a new girlfriend, right? And obviously my wife would be shocked by that reality. and then you'd say, what's she like? Right? And if I turn around and I said, she's sustainable, Louise.
Great.
You just go like, and then the other one is, I say to you, Louise, would you like to come up to my house on Friday night for a dinner party? And you go, oh, that sounds good. And I go, it's a sustainable dinner party.
Oh my God.
No, I'm actually busy that night.
Just have it with your sustainable girlfriend. Yeah,
exactly.
It's there's a lot of it, isn't there?
Yeah. So how do we rebrand this thing that we're trying to achieve, right?
And
to go away from all that and into excitement and tech and beauty and design. And that's what Cool Planet's doing.
That Cool Planet is doing amazing things. Tell me about some of the biggest success stories for the clients of Cool Planet, because there's some hefty figures you could throw about on that one.
Yeah. So like, we, you know, so far on this, if somebody's listening, they think that Cool Planet just does sexy cars and shows them off in Brown Thomas. But actually underneath the cash generation, because you wouldn't want to be depending on the cash that comes off Ava, but the cash generation engine and the growth engine of Cool Planet is its energy business, basically. So what we do there is we go to the biggest polluters in the world. So some of the biggest mining companies in the world, the biggest food companies in the world, all these companies that people give out about. And we get them to dramatically reduce their energy consumption and their carbon consumption. Mm-hmm. And we do that by saving them a lot of money. So, and this is shocking money. So the guys completed a project last week in Brazil for a food company that's saving that company in one factory $4 million.
Wow.
Yeah. And all the carbon that goes along with that. Now, that client is completely delighted. They've got 99 factories, and we're going to roll it out to every one of them. And so this is a significant financial opportunity. It's a significant carbon opportunity. And that's, and that could be anything from boring, making a boiler that they have more efficient, all the way through to installing a gigawatt of solar for somebody.
So that company, that case study there, that's $4 million in that one factory, and now they're rolling it out. Wow. Yeah. So what do you estimate that will be when you've rolled it out?
Like, we've done a project we finished in 2019, saved the client, another big food company, across 20 factories, it saved them $110 million a year.
My word.
Yeah.
So you've managed to find this beautiful balance between altruism, because this is, you know, very important for our planet, and revenue. So that has to feel good.
Yeah, it's like, it's that triple thing of, which is a buzzword, but people, because without our people, we can't do anything. Planet, profit, right? Mm-hmm. And you can put those in any order. And profit is not bad. We cannot fix the problems. To give you an idea, in order to solve climate change, we need to spend $5 trillion a year for 10 years.
And you might say, well, that's impossible. We're never going to come up with that money. But actually, the money to do that is being raised all the time, billions and billions and billions. But you can't raise that money unless you give the people who gave you that money a profit, right? So profit is not a bad word. And this is the thing we argue with a lot of people all the time. It is like, we say infinite ethical wealth creation, right? And then some people get very disturbed by that. Right? They say, that's not what we want. And we go, what's wrong?
Why?
What's wrong?
Yeah. What's not to love there?
Yeah. And then I said it one day at a conference, and just somebody stood up in the audience and just said, that's outrageous. And I was like, what's wrong with that sentence? Like, who wouldn't want infinite ethical wealth creation? Right?
That's crazy.
So yeah, that's
we're just it's about reprogramming the psyche, right? You know, so that people don't stand up and protest to those three words. Yeah.
And it's about disconnecting. You know, myself and my wife recently did a thing called a solo, which is we over in Dartmoor in the UK, we disappeared with somebody keeping an eye on us to make sure we didn't kill ourselves. We by falling off something or whatever, we disappeared for 3 days, no phones, no food.
Wow.
Just water. Yeah.
Together or?
Separate, actually. Together for a day and then separate. Yeah. And best thing I've done in 10 years.
So where were you? Where, like, when you say you could have fallen off something?
We were on a farm, but it was like a 100-acre oak forest that hadn't been disturbed in hundreds of years. And that we booked on Airbnb.
My
it was
God.
Very cheap, actually.
Where were you snoozing? Or like, what kind of, did you have any comforts?
Hamish, the guide we had, who's ex-military, he just gave us 2 tents and 10 liters of water and said, bye.
Oh my God, you're fascinating. And clearly your wife is too. I mean, that's amazing. Yeah. So you felt the better of that.
Oh, like, it just allows you to really get to the truth, right? And we're so addicted to our phones. Like the first 8 hours, 10 hours is like somebody's chopped off your hand, right? Because you keep going, oh, if only I could check this on Google, or if only
how many times did you reach for your pocket?
Like over 8 hours,
crazy.
Almost constantly.
Yeah,
but by the end of the second day, like you start to really understand the things you've been doing wrong and the mistakes you've been making and all that kind of stuff. It's fascinating.
Well, it is. And as I said, you are too. I'm so happy that we had some time to talk about everything. I feel you're important to listen to and quite reassuring to listen to as well. Norman, thanks so much. And for anybody who is knocking about Dundrum and Brian Thomas, go and see the Ava Arctic Defender. Thanks so much for sharing it with us.
Thank you for listening to the Brian Thomas podcast. If you like what you've heard, be sure to subscribe and share, and follow us on Official Brian Thomas on Instagram for more updates.